Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
It's time to get punked up. It's the Album Nerds Podcast. I'm Dude. I got Andy and Don with me. You punks ready to talk about some music?
Yeah, I'm feeling lucky. Got my hair gel and my mohawk here. I'm just about ready.
Wearing a Blink-182 shirt. Nice.
Classic punk, baby.
Don, how about you?
Let's go.
Ooh, wow.
I
felt like I was in 1970s New York City just then. Bone chilling. Very, very good. This is the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums, the album format, and sometimes each other. But we've got a really great show for you today. We're going to be talking about some classic punk albums. We'll each bring one of those to the table for discussion. We are also going to get a deep question from Don. We're going to give some shout-outs to some albums and album-related items we're digging outside of the punk space, mostly. And then we're going to spin the wheel of musical discovery to find out what we'll talk about next time. But this week, it's all about that classic punk.
That's what I'm talking about!
Punk rock emerged in the mid-1970s as a raw, energetic rebellion against mainstream rock and societal norms. The genre produced a number of seminal albums that defined its sound and ethos, influencing generations of musicians to come. We will explore some of the most important and influential punk rock albums that helped shape the movement and continue to resonate today. Today, each of us will present an album from the classic punk era.
Hey, what are you, some sort of punker?
God, I hate punkers.
Punkers.
So, classic punk. We really did try to limit ourselves to albums released before 1980, keep with the spirit of that first wave. I tried personally to avoid like the Sex Pistols, who we've talked about, and the Clash, and the really well-known stuff. I tried to explore, maybe find something I wasn't familiar with before. What else did you listen to this week before settling on a final album to talk about?
The record I almost went with, because I found it so damned enjoyable, was from The Damned. The record, what? Damn, Damn, Damned.
Damn,
right? 1977, it's their first full-length UK punk rock album ever released, apparently. Mm-hmm. I just discovered that. They were kind of, they're toured with The Clash and the Sex Pistols, all kind of caught up in that big wave of punk rock that came out of the UK. Really enjoyed the record, though. It's just a really driving, surprisingly polished punk rock debut there from The Damned.
Yeah, well, I spent some time with Iggy and the Stooges, Raw Power. I think there's some disagreement about whether the Stooges were punk rock or if they were pre-punk. I mean, they feel pretty... They feel pretty punk.
It seems like there's like Iggy's stage antics were more punk than like the music sounds a little bit more Motor City hard rock sometimes.
Yeah.
That came out pretty early in the 70s, right, Tom?
Yeah, that was 1973. But we should do a show on that like pre-punk era with like New York Dolls and the Stooges and MC5.
Proto-punk.
Is that what it's called?
I don't know. Just made that up. Could be.
Sounds proto-punk.
How about you, dude?
So one of those obvious ones that I almost went with actually was the Ramones, their debut album from 1976, self-titled. They're so iconic. Their logo is on t-shirts everywhere. They are a foundational piece in what punk rock was and became. And it's just a catchy and fun to listen to. But ultimately, I was looking for something a little snarlier, a little disenfranchised and angrier. So I went a different direction, but I did enjoy my time with the Ramones. So enough about what we considered. Let's get to our actual choices.
You choose me?
All right, for my classic punk rock selection, we are talking about Buzzcocks and their 1978 debut album, Another Music in a Different Kitchen. Let's play a little bit of the cut, I Don't Mind.
Sounds a little bit like Davy Jones goes punk.
I know, right? You guys believe like the 60s like pop sound of that track?
Yeah.
That's wild. That charted at number 58 on the UK singles list. It was their third single overall, first on the record. Yeah, I was kind of shocked at the pop appeal of this album. So Buzzcocks were formed by Howard Devoto and Pete Shelley in the mid-1970s. They quickly became a part of the growing punk rock scene, playing shows with Sex Pistols and The Clash in those early days. Devoto left the band in 77 before this album came out, saying he wasn't really happy with the direction of where punk rock was headed.
He formed Magazine, which was a decent group.
Sounds like they were not sellouts and more true to punk.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, how punk do you have to be calling punk a sellout in 1977? Right, like, that's so punk, man. My clickbait headline for another Music in a Different Kitchen is Buzzcocks drag pretty pop songs through the punk rock mud, but damn it, they're still pretty. I think this is surprisingly polished and like confident and like hooky. I would say like kind of pop punk record. I think what really surprised me was how repetitive some of these songs are. There's like moments that are very almost like hypnotic, and then they kind of, you know, come along to the same vocal part or the same guitar riff over and over again. Even though the songs are all super short, you know, like 2 or 3 minutes long. I read that Shelley, who ended up being the lead vocalist and guitarist, was a fan of Can guitarist Michael Carioli, which was surprising to me because you don't think of Can as being a big influence on punk rock music, but there it is.
They're more of a psychedelic, would you say, Can?
Psychedelic, like krautrock was like the term I hear used to them frequently.
I just wanted to throw it out there for people that didn't know what Can was, which is probably a lot of people. I didn't even know who they were until like in the last year or so.
I thought it was Con.
All right, why don't we play another cut from the record? This is the closer, Moving Away from the Pulse Beat. You see my book, the passage changed.
You know. Yeah, he still has that, like, kind of that Johnny Rotten sort of snarl or whatever that affect is, you know.
Yeah, that sort of British nastiness.
Yeah.
But it still sounds a little nice.
Yeah. Like he's not going to spit on you, but he might stick his tongue out at you.
You know those Sex Pistols? They spit on their audience.
Yeah, and afterwards he might say, pardon me.
So moving away from the pulse beat, it's actually 5 minutes and 40 seconds long, which is, you know, a huge deviation from, you know, a lot of the punk songs we've been listening to. Yeah. Also kind of atypical because it's largely instrumental, you know, so sort of, you know, moving away from that sort of traditional song format that a lot of the punk records do. And I mean, if you listen to the drums, I think that is the drummer Maher, John Maher. It's not the James. Maher.
John Maher. Yeah.
Your body is a wonderland.
Yeah.
Wow. He's been around longer than I thought.
But if you listen to the drum pattern on that song, it sounds much more complex than, you know, anything you hear on the Sex Pistols record.
Yeah.
You know, so these guys are definitely, you know, pushing the boundaries of punk rock. And then the song goes quiet for a while. There's like a minute of silence, and then it plays a reprise of a song called Boredom. So I don't know. Is that one of the first kind of hidden tracks at the end of the record?
Yeah, I know.
Well, I guess the Beatles did it, but yeah.
On a punk rock record, you wouldn't expect that level of artistry and consideration to the format, I guess.
One could say having a long song is not punk, but then one could also say in the punk space, having a long song is punk.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Because then you're pushing against the conventions of punk.
Exactly.
I remember somebody talking about Green Day at the time. They said, you know, doing Time of Your Life was the most punk rock thing they could do.
Oh, I. Well, yeah.
I guess.
I suppose so.
All right. So my clickbait headline is Buzzcocks serve punk rock hot and fresh out the kitchen. That's a reference to, who is that? Is that R. Kelly? Oops.
Oops, indeed.
Telling me no. At least it wasn't P. Diddy. I mean, yeah.
Well, either way.
Anyway.
Wow.
Yeah, I guess I appreciate this album for how different it is from like a Sex Pistols record. Right. So there's just a lot more going on. I mean, I think there's actual songwriting going on. You know, there's little nuances, you know, that make it, you know, something more. And it's really more of a pop record than a punk rock record.
It feels like they're musicians that play punk rock rather than like the Sex Pistols sort of sounded like it wasn't musicians.
Yeah.
That were just punks that were using music as a way to rebel, you know? And I think that's at least what I was hearing throughout this record, is a little bit more songcraft.
Yeah. Surprisingly well crafted. Yeah. And well recorded too. There's not a lot of like grit and grime on this at all. It's fairly shiny. I mean, we talked about how shiny, or not shiny, but just how good sounding that Sex Pistols record is. I would say this is kind of right in that same vein. Let's play another cut from the record here. This is the opener, Fast Cars.
There it is.
Oh, God.
So Fast Cars, written by Tracy Chapman. No.
No. That's Fast Car, I think, singular.
Driving in your car!
Punk rock Tracy Chapman right there.
Luke Combs has to do this version.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Oh, boy. Yeah, so Fast Cars is the opener to the album. It's an anti-anthem for consumerism. Check box on the punk. Now, punk, is this punk or not?
There.
Yeah. It's high speed, punchy, and delivers a take on society's obsession with possessions. A possession obsession, one might say.
Yes.
My clickbait headline to describe the album is another music in a different kitchen where the buzz meets the cock. Fast, fierce, and fearlessly catchy, punk with a bite. So what I was most obsessed with was the band name.
Okay.
And apparently the name was inspired by a headline that was in a British TV magazine, Time Out, that said, "Get a buzz, comma, cock." And buzz reflects a sense of excitement, energy, or a thrill, right? This was in British parlance at the time. And cock was British slang for a young man with a cheeky or bold attitude. So that's...
Perfect then, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. It is perfect. And it also sounds dirty enough that I think people probably were like, this is rebellious too.
Right.
I can't believe you had bite and cock in the same headline.
I can believe it.
This is more melodic than rawer bands of the era, which we've already kind of gotten into. And it's like this take on Britpop of the 60s, but sped up to punk speeds. I feel like if they slowed it down and were wearing matching suits, they could have, you know, some of these songs could have made it at the top of the pops there in Britain.
No, seriously. In a different time, maybe the Buzzcocks were, you know, something else. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, just that beats per minute that early punk in particular brought up, which gets the heart rate up. So just through the music, the energy is high, especially when it just is unrelenting, that speed that goes through. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a little more gentle, some of our other picks and some of the other things we may have considered, but I think it's well executed and is pop punk before there was such a thing.
Yeah, well said. So the band would have some success until about 1981, and where they would break up after a dispute with their record label, which is a pretty common theme here as we go through these punk rock groups. Their songs have been covered by the likes of the Fastbacks and the Offspring. And this one made it into the 1001 Albums You Must Hear Before You Die infamous list here. So yeah, congrats out to them. Definitely a really cool record. If you're not familiar with the Buzzcocks, please do check out Another Music in a Different Kitchen.
All right, before we get to our next punk rock album selection, why don't we hear a little bit from the worst podcast on Mars?
I'm Amanda, and that's Evan. Say hi, Evan.
Hi, Evan.
And we're the hosts of the Worst Podcast on Mars. This is the podcast that talks music. And on Fridays, we work our way through the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's list of 200 definitive albums. I do a bunch of research trying to figure out why it's on this list. And on Tuesdays, we do smaller episodes that are not part of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's list. And Evan, well, he just literally shows up. So if that's what you're into, please find us on Apple Music or Spotify.
But not Mars. Yet.
Evan always gets me with the but not Mars part. I like that.
Yet.
Wonder how we rank on Mars.
Hopefully we're not the worst podcast.
Right.
Maybe slightly above.
Second worst podcast on Mars.
All right, so my pick for a classic punk rock album comes from a band called Wire. Right, and their album is called Pink Flag. I had to get pink in there, like Pink Floyd, you know.
Yes.
Oh yes, it's the PF. Yes,
definitely. Pink okay. Floyd.
Oh. You're the worst. There
it is. So it was released in November 1977. It's their debut album from the band formed in London in 1976. The lineup features vocalist, guitarist, and songwriter Colin Newman, bass guitarist and lyricist Graham Lewis, guitarist Bruce Gilbert, and drummer Robert Godabed, or Godabed, I don't know.
Godabed, that's a great name.
It's G-O-T-O-B-E-D.
Love it.
Or what his mom used to.
Robert, go to bed.
Talking to me, Mom? What?
Right, so here's the opening cut. Reuters. Yeah, so that, unlike other punk rock, which I think is more angry and rebellious, that one's starting to feel sort of a little sad and depressing, I think, which is what speaks to me.
I know it does.
So, you know, I assume the title refers to the, you know, the news service writers. Mm-hmm. And so the, you know, the lyrics seem to be like a reporter reporting on, you know, just the violence and destruction in the world. At 3 minutes and 3 seconds, it's actually one of the longer tracks on the album. Pretty remarkable.
Yeah, really jamming out on that one.
Yeah, they've, so the album is 35 minutes in total, and there's 21 songs. So that's efficiency.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. It's impressive.
Well, you see that many tracks, it's like, oh no. And then you look at the end, it says 36 minutes or whatever. It's like, oh, all right, I can do that.
So my clickbait headline is Wire spits on punk rock conventions with control and detached intellectualism.
Nice.
We're going to find some parallels, I think, between the Buzzcocks and Wire and the way that they, you know, I think both are kind of pushing punk rock to, you know, to its limits. I actually have a quote from the vocalist, Colin Newman. He says, there's basically two views of Wire. You either think we are not a punk band or that we were the best punk band ever because we broke every single rule of punk.
There you go. Just like I was saying with the Buzzcocks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think maybe, you know, one of the biggest ways they're different from some of the other punk rock is the lyrics are kind of, I think it's just more intellectual, I guess, and abstract. Although I'm not sure I understand what all of them mean, but seems like there's more to them than, you know, than some other punk rock artists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They really are like poetic at times, I would say, and sort of like in like a beatnik sort of like style, I guess. I don't know.
The thinking man's punk.
There you go. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, if you picture punk rock just being, you know, three guys picking up their instruments and just going at it, I think these are more deliberate and thoughtful.
I think I saw a film like that once.
All right. Well, let's hear another cut. This is 1-2-XU.
1-2-XU!
The title of 1-2-XU apparently refers to the phrase 12 hours of a 12-hour day, hinting at monotony and repetition of modern life. And it's probably the punkiest. Although, once you get past the 1-2-XU, the rest of it gets a little bit more into the melodic sounded. Less than 2 minutes, pure energy, no frills. Covered by countless punk bands and considered somewhat of an anthem. My clickbait headline to describe the album: the art punk blueprint that set the stage for alternative rock's takeover a few years later.
Mm.
It captures the experimental spirit of the time, but it also incorporates those elements of art rock and minimalism and critiques of societal norms and encouraging listeners to embrace their own identity. And it's less about society, politics, and rebellion. So, you know, the songs like Three Girl Rumba and X Lion Tamer and even Lowdown sound a lot like alt rock from 8 years later, like early 80s alternative. And I really enjoyed this album as I felt like it was quietly forging ahead what was coming next. And I don't think they even knew it. Did you notice on Three Girl Rumba that it sounds a lot like Elastica's Connection?
It sounds exactly like Elastica's Connection.
Yeah. In fact, they settled that out of court.
Did they? Okay.
Yes. Yes, they did.
Because it was very obvious to me that Atlastica took that.
Is it a direct sample, or is it? Did they just play the same?
I don't think so. No. Yeah. They paid tribute to it.
Yes.
Yes.
All right, well, let's hear another cut. Here's Surgeon's Girl.
I think that's the most punk rock track on the album.
Oh, I don't know.
I think consistently, you're probably right.
For its entire minute and whatever, how many seconds.
Yeah, the 1-2-X you, the way it kicks off, is the most punk rock moment to me, but
okay,
it doesn't hold as well as that song, so I stand corrected.
The song seems to be about pornography in a glossy mag. Yeah, I mean, like all the songs on this record, it kind of like starts out as kind of like a traditional punk rock song, and then like kind of quickly descends into madness, I would say. Just this anthemic mantra that they create, so that it kind of goes through these deranged passages of Colin Newman.
Hello, Newman.
So cool, in my opinion. My clickbait headline for Pink Flag is Wire plant their pink flag squarely between punk rock and the avant-garde, and no one's been able to take it down since. I think this is kind of a landmark album. It just blows my mind. You can be so inventive, I guess, in what's a relatively new genre. You know, 1977, this is still pretty early on punk rock. And they just kind of like, okay, yeah, punk rock, we're going to go in this different direction and kind of like almost start another genre within this genre. So cool. It's just really impressive.
Yeah, I'd never heard of them, to be totally honest. And first listen through, I was like, ooh, this is good. We need this one on the show. So I'm glad Don stuck with it.
I had only heard of them because they opened for Depeche Mode when they played the Rose Bowl in 1988. Yeah. Because they went away in the early 80s and then came back, and they've been going strong ever since.
Nice.
Yeah, this record sounds dirty and grimy and kind of rough around the edges.
Mm-hmm.
Deranged is the word I kept coming back to. It just sounds like there's a lot members are going through.
Yeah, although the production is still pretty clean, though. You know, I think
it's primarily the vocal that makes me feel like that punk rock energy. It's kind of rough and ragged around the edges. Yeah, but it's heady. I mean, it's not a simplistic record by any means. It's enjoyable initially, I think, but there's a lot to dig into, and I don't even feel like I understand a lot of the songs by any means, but they're interesting, and I sincerely appreciate that.
All right. Well, if you're looking to experience a groundbreaking album that redefined punk rock and laid the foundation for post-punk and indie music, dive into Wire's Pink Flag.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
All right. It's time for Deep Questions by Dom. Well, punk rock is about rebellion. So actually, I should rebel and not ask a question.
Whoa. But yeah, it gets very confusing how to be punk.
Yeah.
It's like,
Should we even do a show? Is that more punk rock?
Anyway, so when have you fellas been rebellious?
Yeah, we're definitely big troublemakers over here. Three of the most bland vanilla dudes you could ever meet. This is going to be tough.
That's what makes us punk rock.
One time my mom told me to eat broccoli and I said, no.
I'm going to have my peas instead. Well, I think we all were teenagers. I did have a bit of a rebellious streak when I was in those formative years. I remember going to the mall. The mall was like a popular hangout spot in the mid-90s when I was growing up. And there were a bunch of those little stores kind of in the middle walk area of the mall there. And there was one we'd always walk past that had like this computer kiosk of like some sort of product they were selling that was demoed on this computer screen. And I was fairly into computers at the time, or just starting to get into computers.
That's rebellious right there.
Yeah, I know. Computer nerd rebelling. I figured out a way to reboot this computer and put a password on it, so they would have to go and reset it to get it to go back to their program. So my friends would like distract the shop owner, and I would go and reset this little hack. And we went back there like 3 weekends in a row, and like we're fucking with their computer every time. So It was kind of fun. It was my little way of sticking it to capitalism and the man when I was a young cyberpunk.
Yeah, find out later that the kiosk guy got fired, his family starved, and fell apart. So nice work.
Wow. Cyber terrorism.
Yeah. Take that, Claire's.
Well, the Eclairs has survived. I can't think of anything quite as cool as that, honestly. I don't know. I mean, I was kind of a douche to my teachers when I was in middle school and high school as my way of rebelling.
I was cracking jokes in the back of class. Or?
Yeah, you know, cracking wise, as I like to say. But there was one teacher, it was earth science in eighth grade, Mr. Blowers. And we just did not get along. Like I'd mouth off all the time. I'd call him Mr. Blowers. And he'd call my mom and make me stand outside the classroom and that kind of stuff. Like I was doing well in the class to start, but then I just got this attitude with the dude and it all fell to pieces. So Mr. Blowers was out for a few days because he had had a bicycle accident where apparently he had done a face plant. He came back in and he had all these scabs on his face and everyone's like, oh, welcome back. And I was like, looking good, Blowers.
That's so cruel, man.
I got in school suspension for a couple of days, which really was kind of nice because teachers came to you with your homework. Cheerleaders delivered my lunch. So they were, really no downside to.
That's where a lot of bands get started, I think, is an in-school suspension, hanging out with the other punks.
Yep.
I'm struggling to think of some, but, you know, other than like trying to stage a walkout for not, you know, being able to wear shorts, you know, in April or something in high school. No, I was actually, so, I mean, these days, the way I'm most rebellious is I've started like writing in cursive again. I just feel like the whole world is moving on. And actually, like ironically, as soon as we were allowed to not write in cursive anymore in school, like I immediately started printing again. Mm-hmm. But in recent years, I've just, you know, I'm writing in cursive.
Bringing it back.
I write on the board in my class and my students are like, what is that?
Can they even read it? Like, I mean, do they? It's pretty different.
Irrelevant. I'm just kidding.
Whether the kids can read your notes.
Boy, you outdid us all, man. Writing in cursive. How much more rebellious? That's so punk.
So punk. Well.
All right. Well, what makes you a rebel? Let us know. Hit us up on Instagram and Facebook or leave a comment on our website, albumnerds.com.
So I'm going with Stiff Little Fingers. Formed in 1977. I shouldn't have been Stiff Middle Fingers. Wouldn't that have been even more rebellious?
Yes.
Belfast, Northern Ireland. They began as a rock covers band called Highway Star. So the band is Jake Burns on vocals and guitar, Henry Clooney on guitar and vocals, Ally McMorty on bass, and Brian Falloon on drums. I like that, Falloon. The album is Inflammable Material, recorded in 1978, released in 1979. Why don't we listen to a little bit of Suspect Device? So that song probably should be best remembered for being the first time anyone said sus. Instead of suspect. They're suspicious, which now the kids are saying. The album and that song capture the energy, tension, and raw rebellion of Northern Ireland during the Troubles. You know,
the Troubles,
which we have touched on before. That's what they called the battle between the Protestants and the Catholics there in Northern Ireland. It was kind of the polite way of referring to the sort of war that was happening. Clearly, very Sex Pistols forward in terms of the delivery a couple years after the Sex Pistols did their thing.
More like bazookas.
God, you're terrible today. The song Suspect Device, the title was referencing the heightened suspicion and fear in Northern Ireland at the time of suspect devices or bombs. It's a powerful critique of the oppressive environment the people were living in at the time. Clickbait headline I came up with for this one. Inflammable material will make you raise a pint to punk's rebellion. More than just the Troubles, it's a celebration of youth and defiance. So it portrays those harsh realities of the Troubles and the frustrations of the youth caught in those sectarian divisions, the Catholics and the Protestants. While five of the songs directly address the Troubles, the album also covered other typical punk themes, just reflecting on life in Belfast as youth during this period. So why don't we jump into another track? This one's called Rough Trade. Trading us to get the trip by you. We were betrayed, 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 betrayed.
How freaking punk rock is it to make a song about your record label that's released by that record label? That I love it.
Well, they had been signed to Island Records briefly and dropped right before the album. So
my clickbait headline for Inflammable Material is Johnny O'Rotten. Couldn't have done it any better himself.
That's pretty brilliant, Andy.
Well,
I got to give you props on that one.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm Johnny O'Rotten.
I mean, definitely you can draw some pretty direct lines between them and Sex Pistols, but that's not a bad thing by any means. Maybe Stiff Little Fingers has a slightly bit more range on this album.
I agree.
There's a few tracks that maybe are not quite just straight ahead punk. There's, for example, Barbed Wire Love in the middle of the record.
Yeah, I love that song.
It's like another like 60s pop song, which like will do up vocals and stuff.
Yeah, even further across that line where it just totally just sounds like that Barbed Wire Love. It's more it's more that it's barbed wired, which is more punk and more kind of, you know, probably buildings with fencing around them in Northern Ireland and stuff.
It still has that
element. Yeah. But yeah, it sounds like a shooby-doo-wop song.
Mm-hmm. And there's a few songs that are even a little bit more like straight-ahead rock, kind of like maybe more like Clash style.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which I guess the Clash were their main influence and reason for going punk.
Yeah, you can definitely hear the influence from those two groups in particular. I don't know. The focus on the conflict in Northern Ireland is very apparent on the record. It almost feels like it's so focused on it, it gets a little bit in the way at times.
Yeah, see, what I thought was important about that was if you live in Belfast at that time, that would dominate your every day. It would dominate the news. It would dominate what streets you walked on. So in a way, like for me, like if we're comparing to the Sex Pistols, it felt more entrenched in something painful and
it's a little more tangible, the things they're talking about, I guess. It's a cool record, and it does feel like a little bit of a history lesson, at least for us in the States here. The record itself, it sounds very, very raw in the way that, you know, like Sex Pistols do. I'm surprised how loud the drums are, I guess. It's really, really forward in the mix, and it helps kind of lead to that aggression and that sort of like raw energy that they bring.
That whole beats per minute thing we were talking about earlier of punk of this era, where it just amp up the speed to make it more frenetic.
Yeah, it's chugging along for sure.
All right, so why don't we jump into a little bit of alternative Ulster. At first, I thought it was Alternative Lobster. I'm glad it wasn't.
Yeah, so that song was written by Jake Burns in response to a request from a Northern Irish fanzine called Alternative Ulster.
Mm.
So the song addresses the boredom and lack of opportunities for young people in Belfast, as well as the oppressive presence of police and military. So, yeah, you know, driving guitars, and you've got Burns. Again, it's like a snarl.
Yeah. He is a good snarl.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So my clickbait headline is Stiff Little Fingers and Flammable Material, Punk Rock So Hot It'll Set Your Arse on Fire. Handle with fucking care.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, they'd say the F word in on this album, which was unusual at that time, at least in America.
Yeah, just want to talk about Jake Burns' vocals a little bit. So yeah, so his voice is a little different from the Buzzcocks guy, Shelley, and Johnny Rotten. Maybe more like a raspy thing kind of going on. Like somebody described it as like a permanent sore throat.
Yeah.
But
he probably had one.
Yeah. You know, it just seems to have, I don't know, it's just much more aggressive than the other two records, you know. And I mean, part of it is the voice, part of it is the drums.
Subject matter.
Yeah. I think the Northern Ireland stuff probably elevates it in that way.
When Stiff Little Fingers sent out their debut single, Suspect Device, apparently they wrapped the cassette to look like a bomb as a prank.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. That
would be jailable these days, but a radio station thinking it was real actually threw it in a bucket of water to try to defuse it.
During that time. I mean, yikes.
Yeah, right?
Wow. Other, you know, a couple other songs, Wasted Life, is a good track. It's an anti-violence stance, addressing those who pressure young people to fight to not do it. And interesting cover, Bob Marley's Johnny Was, and they adapted the song with a punk energy. And I think that's one of the first times that reggae kind of made its way into punk, which, of course, later on, ska and all that stuff came. So thought that was a cool moment, too.
Hmm. Yeah, very interesting.
So Inflammable Material is a landmark punk album I hadn't heard before, but I got really into it with every listen. And it captures that raw anger and resilience of a generation living amid some major upheaval in their society. And I think there are a lot of people out there today that know what that's like. So it proves that punk's power to be both rebellious and relevant started early and continues today. So go check out Stiff Little Fingers, Inflammable Material.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
All right, fellas. Well, I know we've all been, holding our middle fingers in the air all week, rebelling against the man.
Getting kind of stiff.
Yeah, my arthritis is acting up from it.
Well, I hope you didn't rebel against the podcast because you were supposed to be digging some other things. What were you digging?
Oh, yeah. I got a couple of things here in my hastily constructed brown paper package bag that I'm sending out to all the radio stations.
I thought you were going to say that you had a few things safety pinned to your face.
Okay, that's a good one, too. All right, let's start out with something actually from Ireland. Talking about the folk rock group Villagers. They have an album out called That Golden Time. This is the solo project of Connor J. O'Brien. Let's play a little bit of You Lucky One. It's like one of those records that I would love to dismiss, but there's just so many good moments on it. I keep coming back to it. It's kind of dark, brooding, but very catchy. There's a lot of really memorable songs on there. And the other one I wanted to throw out that I've been digging, just released in the last week here from artist Peter Perrette, I believe is how you say his name. The album is called The Cleansing. This is the third solo studio album for this English songwriter who was in the group The Only Ones, which were a 70s punk rock group known for Another Girl, Another Planet was the name of their big hit back in the 70s there. Let's play the opening cut from the new album. This is I Wanna Go With Dignity.
About getting older and facing death.
Yes.
Yeah, I gotta do it eventually. Yeah. That seems to be very, very much.
Want to do it with dignity. Or diggity? No diggity.
That's a very moody, groovy, artsy rock record there. Been enjoying it quite a bit. What you been digging on, Don?
I've been spending a lot of time with the new album from The Cure called Songs of a Lost World. But on the day of its release, they actually did a live stream of a show that they did in Troxie in London. So they performed the entire album as the first set, and then they did a second set, and then like two encore. So it's like 31 songs. It's still available streaming, so you should check it out on YouTube. Just search The Cure Songs of a Lost World live stream, and it's just sounds really good. Here's a clip from the song, End Song.
Is that like a thing they do where they kind of like combine a word with song every album?
They've done it a few times, yeah. Because there's two on this album. Right? There's War Song and Plain Song. Although War Song might be two words.
Cool, yeah. I mean, I have listened to the album once. A little more instrumental time spent than I was expecting, but I'll run through it a few more times before I have an opinion on it.
Yeah. And also, I figure I'll just keep throwing out new holiday records.
Great.
Oh, boy.
Jimmy Fallon, perhaps you've heard of him, the host of The Tonight Show. He has an album of fun songs called Holiday Seasoning. Features a bunch of stars, Meghan Trainor, Justin Timberlake, The Roots, Jonas Brothers, Dolly Parton. But the biggest one is Weird Al Yankovic.
Oh,
so he does a song called New Year's Eve Polka 54321.
All day watching Twilight Zone rerun. Just stick a fork.
Yeah.
All right.
I just like that because he
episode guys.
Yes.
Oh yes, I would do that. I just like that he mentioned the Twilight Zone marathon.
Right.
Do that all the time on yours. What are you digging, dude?
I went digging around looking for something maybe a little heavier. And of course, you know, we're not too far away from Halloween being a couple weeks ago. So there's still a lot of spooky stuff getting released. New Skeletal Faces released an album called Until the Night on November 1st, 2024. Let's listen to a little bit of Raise the Dead. So they're a trio that channels the eerie spirit of death rock with metal and punk elements. Also kind of a Sunset Strip 80s metal vibe throughout. This album weaves goth, punk, and metal into a fierce atmospheric journey. I've listened to it twice so far. It's pretty cool.
Sounds interesting.
And then, of course, being the album collecting punk that I am, I do have a copy of a classic punk record, The Clash, London Calling, which came out at the very end of 1979. Let's listen to a little bit of the title track. London calling to the faraway towns. Now war is declared. Now, of course, Trailblazers of punk rock, politically charged lyrics and genre-defying sound, kind of post-punk in the making. I think they kind of not only were important in the movement of punk, they helped move it forward. I picked up this copy at a record store years ago. It was like $5. The discs are in good shape, but the packaging not so much. So I've had, you know, do some cleaning and maintenance. But it's playable. It's a little crackly, but it's nice to have the real thing in my collection.
Yeah, we gotta do a full review on that one sometime. Mm-hmm. Not too far away.
All right, so what are you digging? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Also on our website, albumnerds.com.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, it's about that time on the show, and I'm reminded of the great Turkish musician, Joe Strummer. Do you guys know Joe Strummer was from Turkey?
I did not. I believe they say Turkey now.
Turkey, excuse me.
Well, you know, turkey gets confusing for some. Gobble, gobble, and whatnot.
Okay. Well, Mr. Strummer of the Clash, obviously, he said, punk rock isn't something you grow out of. Punk rock is an attitude, and the essence of that attitude is give us some truth.
There you go. Mm.
With that in mind, let's bring up my friend and yours, Wadbot. We'll see what we'll be talking about on next week's episode.
Growing up isn't easy. Next time you'll explore albums that capture the trials, triumphs, and messy emotions of finding your way. Buckle up for a journey through coming-of-age classics.
So growing up, that'll be interesting. Be chasing albums that have themes of growing up, getting old.
Coming of age.
This is growing up. I call it.
Yeah, you got it.
All right, well, what's your favorite punk rock record? What's your favorite coming-of-age record? What else are you listening to? Leave a comment on our website or email us at podcast@albumnerds.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Album Nerds. And also, please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so via PayPal at albumnerds.com/support.
Thank you so much for joining us here on the Album Nerds Podcast. We'll catch you next time when we all try to learn how to grow up.
It's about time, man.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Catch you next week.
And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man in the moon.
Try to get through that one without crying, huh?
Yeah. We'll get together then. You know, we'll have a good time then.